Hello and welcome to Father Figures, a show about parenting with a focus on fatherhood, uncommon fathers, fathers of all stripes. Here is where we explore the risks and rewards, the joys and the griefs of being a dad. I'm Stephen Amaya. This episode is part two of a two-part series with Paul Summers Jr., a father and author who's written a book entitled Hide and Seek, A Dad's Journey from Soulless Addiction to Soul Custody. As you may recall from last time, Paul is in recovery and had some serious difficulties before getting sober and gaining custody of his daughter. The first episode was about the abandonment of responsibility on the part of both of the parents, and this episode, part two, is about coming out the other side. So here in episode two, we're going to go through the efforts Paul experienced with regard to the split nature of his emotional and physical life and making it through to the other side. In the last episode, we talked about addiction and how some addicts think differently, at least insofar as what we pay attention to and focus on. Addiction is baffling, insidious, and patient. So let's get on with this, shall we? We began by talking about, after having been given full custody of his daughter, thanks in part to Oregon's law of family leave, I was curious about how dads who've gained and maintained custody are doing.
I mean, we were living in Oregon, and believe it or not, Oregon is one of the more fair states when it comes to, like, how many kids end up with custody for the males versus females. And, you know, hey, I'm super grateful Oregon's one of those states. I definitely had to work for it. I had to keep showing up and keep fighting to protect my kid. I mean, as far as, like, the statistics is the word I was trying to say, not facts. You know, the statistics show, I don't think they show there's a sweeping change when it comes to, like, gender bias, you know, when it comes to the courts and the outcome with kids. It is changing. Like, some other numbers that are changing are how many households are run, you know, by single dads or, you know, or just dads. Like, that number is going up. Yeah, I mean, I've been on social media for a few years now, and as a, you know, a guy that's trying to promote a book about a dad getting clean and sober for his daughter and ending up with sole custody, I've got a lot of, you know, backlash from women that who, you know, they're from that old school of, like, a man doesn't raise a kid, or a man doesn't nurture a child.
Especially a girl, you know.
Especially a girl, oh my God. And, like, all the statistics say otherwise, you know, and oh my God, just like the ruthless, like, keyboard warrior battles with people that, you know, it's trying to, like, extend this message, like, hey, a man can raise a child every bit as well as a woman can. And like, instead of, like, let's fight about it, like, let's try to bring together a cohesion where, you know, I know there was, you know, 200, 300, 400, 500, 600 years of, like, the man was the worker and the woman was at home. And somehow that woman being at home got devalued. And I don't know why or how, but, you know, what matters is that, like, it takes a family to raise a kid and to give that kid its best opportunities and chances and psyche and, you know, psychological development. And who cares if it's the male or female going out to work, you know?
People have notions that because it's a man, there's going to be some sort of transformation in the child that turns them to some sort of deviant.
Those kind of thoughts, you know. And that's just, I mean, that's archaic thinking, you know what I mean? It's like, well, if you want to be progressive, so do we, you know?
Yeah. And 600, 700, 800 years ago, you know, when the man went to work and the woman stayed, even then, childcare was really expensive.
Tell
me a little bit about the book. I liked what I've read of it. I bought the book, and I'm looking forward to finishing it. And it's really, you know, it's a kind of book where you can open it and see, oh, this is going on, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, this is quite a story. Yeah.
Well, thank you. I had a few intentions when writing the book. One of them was to, you know, tell the story of a man getting custody. A man who really, like, the story starts out, he doesn't deserve it, and he's probably like the kind of character that, you know, oh, I wouldn't want that guy dating my daughter or whatever, you know.
Right.
And the other part of it is the aspect of an addict. You know, a lot of us, you know, an addict or an alcoholic, like, I believe what I have is a disease. Mm-hmm. And I know that the people who were the closest to me were the ones that suffered the most when I was active in my addiction. You know, besides me, you know, destroying my own life, but I didn't care about my own life.
Yeah.
And so what I wanted to do was present the story with some of the inner workings, you know, the denial, the rationalization, the things that are kind of common with addicts. Yeah.
The addict mind. Yes.
The addict mind. And just share that as, you know, as some of my friends who have read it, they, you know, they've said like, oh my God, you know, you were so, you know, people that knew me in my active addiction, they're like, you were so unpredictable. Like, you would say you'll be there on time and you would completely sell it, and you wouldn't even show up. And then, you know, and it's like, so I want people that aren't struggling with addiction to understand the thinking a little better.
How difficult it can be to dig out of that hole, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I wanted to like put that into like inner thoughts going on in the head, and like, you know, why would this person act this way? And a big part of that is, part of why I wanted to do that was my wife, she lost her dad to alcoholic dementia.
Uh-huh.
Her ex-husband had issues with alcoholism, and like, she's never seen me use because I've been clean longer than we've been together. But you know, some of those behaviors are there. And so she's mm-hmm. in Al-Anon, which is mm-hmm. this wonderful program helping somebody understand, you know, and we go to these meetings that are called Chapter 9, and where it's like uh-huh. the person using and the person that's not using as a couple, you know, talk about things that are going on with them, just like a regular meeting. And, and wow, you learn so much of like, here's this person that has this behavior, and here's this person who really loves this person that has this mm-hmm. behavior. Mm-hmm. And they're drawn to each other, even though some things are total opposites. And, it can be harmful or or healthy. And so that was part of why I wanted to like, well, maybe if I share some of what was going on in my head, somebody who loves an alcoholic can like relate.
Uh-huh.
And it'll help them. You know, it's not their fault. They didn't cause it, that kind of stuff.
You know, like, what words do you have for someone out there who still suffers? You know, I mean, what do you have to say that might be helpful? I don't know. That's kind of hard.
I mean, I my first go-to on that is like, you're never too old.
Right.
You know. Don't give. I mean, I was 44 when I got clean.
Yeah.
So I you know, my mess lasted for a long time. But I still, you know, I see people that are in their 50s now going through it, mm-hmm. and it's like, man, I'm so glad I'm not in my 50s, like still searching everywhere for a bag of dope to start my day. And
the early life is full of headwinds.
Yeah,
you gotta find something to relieve the pain sometimes, but you know, then the pain comes to live with you, and
and you know, it takes years to unravel it all, and
yes,
I mean, I for me, like volunteering is a big thing. It's just like giving back, and that was kind of how I found my way into sound healing as well.
Yeah. Now that's a very interesting topic, because I've seen these, demonstrations of
Oops.
these instruments, that vibrate
Yeah.
and you hold it in your hand and you make sounds with it, and it's ringing and tones, and just I'm really,
Right.
really curious about that. Yeah.
Yeah, like there's like, crystal bowls and Tibetan bowls and
Right.
gongs and chimes and being a musician, I mean musician, sorry, music has always been like, it's been my game changer for mood swings,
Yeah.
like I mean there's even times when I want to be depressed and I'll put on some sad music and really
Yeah.
it sort of walks me through that feeling
Yeah.
and then I'm okay,
And that's the
and
thing. That's it's okay to be sad. There is
yeah, totally.
appropriate sadness,
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
grief.
In fact, oh, go ahead.
Grief, in the life of the addict is a very interesting dynamic. I mean,
Yeah.
the standard five stages of death, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And
Yeah, true,
it's a
true.
cycle that goes, and it comes back, comes back, maybe not in the same order. Maybe it comes back as 80% anger, and
Yeah, I think mine did.
yeah, anger is a my personal thought about anger is that it's hurt that has aged. So if you realize that, and you can,
That can you say that again, Stephen? That it's what?
I think anger is hurt that has aged. So
Oh, gotcha.
it's hurt that was not expressed,
Yeah.
and so you carry it around and it becomes anger. When we are hurt, it's really therapeutic, I think, to respond immediately to it,
Yeah. Okay. I totally agree with that. Like if you're driving right now and you're listening to the show and you're really hurting, like it's okay to cry. Pull over and let it out. That's the best feeling,
And you so many addicts, I think, just feel that they don't belong,
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. In a stadium and feeling totally alone. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So back to the sound healing, like I've always known it had these healing powers. I wouldn't be here if it didn't. I wouldn't have been able to handle life. And I think it was about a year ago, I had a friend reach out and she was like, "Hey, you're one of the best musicians I know, and I got all this funding. I'm going to open this treatment center in Nashville, and what I want you to do is to put together a music program." And I was just like, "Wow!" I had been praying for a direction, like something that I could do with the music, the music to help others. And so she pointed me in this direction, and so I started doing research. And I ended up finding, about all this neuroscience, like this new science, this neuroscience, and how different sounds, different songs, all this stuff can affect somebody. And it's like, well, I always knew that, but now it's like proven. Like they're looking at brains and going, look how this brain's like repairing itself with this certain, songs or style of music. And so I was like, okay, well, let me start looking into different styles of music. And I came across this thing called 528 hertz solfeggio frequency. Sorry, let me say that again. Solfeggio frequencies. And it's like the Gregorian chants and like the Tibetan monks, the Sanskrit, I don't know, songs that they sang. We're in this like tuning and
And well, this is what it makes me think. It makes me think of, it's nonverbal, and it's a meditative being there,
So the research I did, I ended up getting certified as a sound healer, and I came back to her with this, like, yeah, I want to do this the sound I can do the sound healing thing, but what I've discovered is I can do it with a guitar instead of with the bowls. If you tune the guitar to 444, A444, like most guitars or most music is in A440. And then there's all this history of why it ended up in A440 when it was in other, like, I guess the universal A is, anyway, it's different history. That the guitar will be in this frequency, and if I'm in certain keys, it'll be 528 hertz, and then the healing comes through the what I call them songscapes is what I make them into songscapes,
Now, how is it possible to do you do this anywhere publicly? Just because it, and
What I started out, and this was a little less than a year ago, I started doing like chill music because I really like it late at night, or at night before bed. I like these like instrumentals, and some of them have nature sounds with them, and it just helps me calm down and just be in more of an open state of mind. And so I started writing some songs like that at first, and I don't even know how this like kind of branched over, but I started playing with a yoga instructor, and so at a yoga studio, I just like got out of my shell or something and was like, hey, would you like some accompaniment? This music is non-invasive was the term I used, and because that's. A lot of yoga instructors use music while they're doing that, and music kind of takes you away a little bit, and you're more open to learning new stuff,
Your brain gets
and
rid of words. Yeah.
exactly. And so, yeah, we started doing. I started working with a guy named Adam, and we started doing a few different shows, and sessions. They're not called shows. That's the rock musician in me, but. We're doing like different sessions, and then I came across the 528 hertz, and I started introducing that into the sessions we would do, and started getting this feedback from the clients. Like one guy came up and he's like, I don't know what that was, but that was like the most like relaxing and deep, thoroughly satisfying yoga I've ever done. And this was like a guy that was married to somebody who worked in this yoga studio. And I'm like, okay, he's probably done a lot of yoga. And for him to come up and give us that feedback, was like, wow, okay, we're onto something, and then
Now,
I just go ahead.
can anyone see you do this, or is it just something you do sporadically?
Yeah, so what I ended up doing was I reached out to, there was something that was held in California in August, in the Sequoias. It was called Camp Soberfest, and I asked if I could come down and do a sound healing, and that was at this 528 hertz. Now, also 528 hertz has been proven to ease withdrawal symptoms for alcoholics, like as they're going through. So I did this 1 hour session on in the grass outside under the stars right next to a lake. I mean, it was like a perfect 65 degree night, and people came up to me, and afterwards, I mean, the feedback was so genuine and heartfelt. I mean, I was just like almost in tears, like so many people said they were so profoundly affected by it. And so with that, I'm doing that now, and so far I do shows at studios that have like wellness studios, where I've done a couple of them in Vancouver. I am doing them in the Vancouver area. I'm actually looking at doing one in Astoria. I gotta, it takes maybe this program
Well,
to,
you let us know. We'll show up.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. 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 'Cause, Wife and I and the kids, we love Astoria. We try to go to Astoria as often as we can. Yeah, I started coming to Astoria in like 1998. I used to play at a little place called Cafe Uniontown, which was right under the bridge. It was like kind of a classy restaurant, I think, or
Oh,
something. And
okay.
I would just play for tips, and they would put me up. Somebody had like this beautiful property overlooking the mouth of the Columbia, and it was always worth it to make that drive out. And
Yeah,
yeah.
it's a beautiful place. It's a beautiful place. I know one thing I noticed was there are a lot of broken people here. I mean,
Yeah.
physically and psychologically, but broken by the river, broken by the sea, broken by the forest, broken by the tree.
Yeah.
They're
Yeah.
tough people here.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It's got that in its DNA, you know? Like,
It does. It does. And I think it's good in that it fights above its weight.
definitely. Good way to put it. Good way to put it.
Well, Paul Summers, I want to thank you for being on the show. It's been enlightening, and
Oh, thank you, Stephen.
I'll think about it for a long time.
Thank you for what you're doing for men.
So, just as we go, tell me about the book, the title, and I'm sure we can find it in all of fine bookstores.
Oh, thank you for letting me discuss that. The book is called Hide and Seek, Dad's Journey from Soulless Addiction to Soul Custody. It's available, of course, at the Amazon. It's available at my website, which is Paul Summers Jr., like for junior, paulsummersjr.com. But it's also available at your local bookstore. You just have to go in or go on their website and order it, and they can get it in for you. So every bookstore has that ability to pick up a copy of the book for the person that wants it. And I would love if you did that, because that supports local business. So,
Yeah, it does. It does.
yeah.
Well, thanks a lot, Paul, and hopefully we'll get together when you come to Astoria.
That'd be so awesome. Thank you so much for this, for your time, Stephen, and the interview.
I'm going to date myself here. When I was a kid, there were these things called blue chip stamps and S&H green stamps. Do you remember them? If you're old enough, you do. If you're really young, I don't know. Anyway, you'd get them when you shopped at certain places, particularly gas stations. The last part of the transaction was the lever that dispensed the stamps. The clerk or the checkout person or the gas station attendant would pull a lever, and out would come a number of stamps commensurate with the size of your purchase. You'd lick the back of the stamps and paste them into books. After much patience, diligence, and discipline, once you filled a certain number of books, you'd take them to a store that would just be a store for exchanging your stamps for merchandise. That's all it did. Decorative items mostly, household items like lamps or toasters or wall art and the like. When I was a kid, my house was decorated in early blue chip stamp. There was a catalog of things you could redeem, and it was always a thrill to go into the blue chip stamp store and come out with merchandise without any money changing hands. It felt like we were getting away with something. I think what Paul has been through is similar to the blue chip stamp experience. The satisfaction was in the patience and discipline of collecting the stamps and envisioning how many books of stamps you'll need to redeem what you want. Paul, in a sense, has done some redeeming of himself. He's gone through the process of redemption and getting clean and sober, an effort that requires patience, diligence, and discipline. He turned in his past for his future and that of his child. He gave up all hope of a better past. He gave them both a second chance. Redemption is there for those in peril, but there comes that fork in the road where you can choose between redemption and victimhood, an easy role to slide into, victimhood. Feeling like a victim is tricky in that there can be comfort in feeling like that. We've all wrapped ourselves in self-pity from time to time, but to adopt victimhood is to decide to surrender. and stay there, shooting flaming arrows, which is no fun. Maybe redemption requires surrender, with one of the elements of that surrender being humility. Now, this redemption and healing might require one of the hardest acts, and that is the act of forgiveness, especially of oneself after a life of abandonment. Many people enjoy the idea of karma, but I think there's an element to it insofar as social interactions go, where people use it as a kind of vengeance from a distance, the bad guys getting what they have coming to them. Karma has its place, I suppose, but instead I prefer to think about grace. And grace seems a bit closer to forgiveness. In many cases, it's forgiveness for those who don't deserve it. And I think we'll just leave it right there, other than to say perhaps redemption may be the realization that one belongs here after all. I want to thank Paul Summers Jr. for being a guest on the show. I want to thank Jason Shaw of Audionautics.com for the music. And remember, comments and questions are always welcome at RadioRanchero@gmail.com. And now, for the dad joke. My wife and I have decided not to have kids. The kids are taking it pretty badly. Okay, one more and I'm out. I found a wooden shoe in my toilet today. It was clogged. Thanks again for listening, and remember, the days may be long, the jokes may be bad, but the years are short.
Hey, a man can raise a child every bit as well as a woman can, and like instead of like let's fight about it, like let's try to bring together a cohesion where I know there was 200, 300, 400, 500, 600 years of like the man was the worker and the woman was at home, and somehow that woman being at home got devalued, and I don't know why or how, but what matters is that, like, it takes a family to raise a kid and to give that kid its best opportunities and chances and psyche and, psychological development. And who cares if it's the male or female going out to work, and I know that the people who were the closest to me were the ones that suffered the most when I was active in my addiction. Besides me destroying my own life, but I didn't care about my own life. And so what I wanted to do was present the story with some of the inner workings, the denial, the rationalization, the things that are kind of common with addicts.
The addict mind,
If you're driving right now and you're listening to the show and you're really hurting, like, it's okay to cry.
Yeah.
Pull over and let it out.